You've stopped in at the Guidepost, brought to you by the American Saltwater Guides Association. Stock up on gear, grab a coffee at the counter, and get ready to hear incredible fish stories from the best captains on the East Coast and thought-provoking conversations with stakeholders and policymakers working to protect these fisheries. This podcast is presented by Costa Sunglasses.
What is up, everyone? Remember this voice? It's like I never left. Feels good to be back in the saddle. Captain Cody Rubner here, joined by the man who's been holding it down at the Guidepost here for quite some time, Mr. Tony Friedrich. And today is, Tony, you know, growing up listening to sports radio in Boston, there used to be one of the stations that did Agenda Free Friday. And I feel like we're bringing some sort of version of that. This is a little bit of a housekeeping episode, not going to be a long one. We've had a couple absolute heavy hitters in the last few weeks, you know, clocking hours and 2 hours and really worthy and dynamic dialogue. I hope that people view it that way. And I hope that people are taking away a lot for advocacy, stuff they haven't considered, stuff that's on the horizon, question they should be asking. But today, not going to be that vibe. We're just checking in. We'll call it a housekeeping episode. And got a few things to catch you up on, a couple things to riff on for a minute or two, and then we'll tie it all up and hope everyone has a good Tuesday at work or on the water. First things first, while we're on the topic of the Guidepost, we are starting to hit a cadence we're happy with again. We're really, really happy that our listeners stick with us in the 5 years we've done this. We've gone through stretches where we're hammering them out every day for a week, and then we go a couple weeks where just everything is so crazy. And unfortunately, and fortunately, that's part of being a small and mighty team. But we have some good ones flowing out right now and some more in the hopper and some more on the schedule. One or two we'll talk about throughout this podcast. And we just launched the Instagram page. We have used the ASGA at Saltwater Guides Association on Instagram and American Saltwater Guides Association on Facebook. We have used those pages to promote worthy and really important pillar episodes. But some episodes have kind of snuck through the track or through the cracks and not got the same level of promotion and love and exposure that they deserve. But we have an Instagram page now for the Guidepost. It is at Guidepost Podcast, and you're going to see clips starting to fly through left and right there to try to give maybe some of these more important or more dynamic conversation pieces a little bit more exposure and feed the algorithm the beast that, you know, we've been very committed to trying to keep things classy, keep things streamlined and not spam you. I've worked with social media pages for major companies for years. Never once has ASGA hit you with the Crankbait Friday. What's your favorite lure? You know, send this to someone who'd get skunked. We really try to avoid the clickbait and algorithm feeding crap, but these conversations are really important. A lot go into these podcasts, and we're really hoping to find some new listeners. So share the podcast with a friend. Maybe not this episode. Get them started on a really compelling one. And follow the Guidepost Podcast on Instagram. And if you see a clip or two, feel free to engage in the conversation. We always get emails and one-off messages on all the platforms. And this page will be a new opportunity for you to engage directly with, as though you were there when we recorded those podcasts. Throw in questions, ask about specific segments, whatever that might be. And if stuff gets really compelling, we'll jump on here and answer it or respond to it or whatever. So first things first, new Instagram page, which is awesome. We have a really badass blog coming live within the next few hours. It'll be within the next 12 hours, 8 to 12 hours after this podcast for sure. If it's not this afternoon, it'll be first thing tomorrow morning. And encourage you all to go check that out. It ties in perfectly with our last podcast, which was a humdinger. I got to edit it. Tony was on it with Mario and Jake. It went for about a fortnight. And I think they traveled 1,000 miles during it, but really important stuff and some really important conversations regarding striped bass and potential conflation of menhaden advocacy with striped bass advocacy. So important conversations, new blog coming live. Last episode, again, deserves a touch as well. Tony, I'm going to throw you on the mic here for a second. Advocacy-wise, there is something coming up that when you bring it up, people are going to say, like, haven't we done this 19 times? But the correct answer is yes, you have. And also that it's a good thing. So far, it's a good thing that you have done it multiple times as an advocate, but also it's a positive thing because every step of the way, quote unquote, you have won. It's gone positively. Why don't you give people a quick outlook into, obviously, there'll be a full call to action blog, all that stuff, but what the heck's going to go down here in the coming weeks with North Carolina?
So, you know, North Carolina has an arduous state process on setting regulations, and we're at step 42 of 58, and on August 27th, there's going to be an opportunity to comment again on the Atlantic Bonito regulations, you know, limiting it to 5 fish per angler within the state of North Carolina. And I would be remiss not to let people know that we wouldn't have to do this if people didn't behave horribly. And for everyone crying about it, for the few people who are crying about it in North Carolina, maybe it's not a great idea to put pictures of 100 dead bonito cooking in the sun on the deck of your boat, and then I get pictures a couple hours later with hundreds of bonito floating around in an inlet or a marina. We just have to treat things with respect, and common sense isn't so common, and we can't afford to lose another fish. So this is an opportunity to comment on, which is really rare in North Carolina, but this is an opportunity for us to comment on, like a webinar. So you don't have to drive to some crazy isolated little beach town in North Carolina that's 4 hours from where you live.
That's
nice.
You
can click a link, say your piece. And I really think if we do not need 400 people commenting on there, but if we could get 20, 25, 30, man, that would make a difference.
And so,
Cody said, we're going to do a blog, we're going to do a podcast, we're going to tell exactly everyone, here's the link, this is where you go. And, you know, we got a little over 2 weeks to plan for it.
This is more of a reassurance step, right? Give these commissioners and decision makers, you know, the visible support from the public saying, like, hey, we've been a big fan of everything that's gone on so far. Keep this thing moving down the track. Here's a couple dozen people just to remind you that we're still watching, that we really care about this, and please keep it moving. And like Tony said, it is amazing how sometimes, especially some of these lawmakers, barely see anyone come through for some of the stuff that gets all the way down to step 497 out of 512, like they have in North Carolina. And sometimes a dozen people can make all the difference, where they go, wow, man, look at a dozen people took time out of their day on a Wednesday or whatever. People must actually, you know, care about this. And they extrapolate that out to more people care about this than we think. So awesome. We'll keep everyone in the loop there. Public sentiment's been awesome down there, Tony. I mean, I feel like for between Bonito and Albies, I don't have the numbers in front of me right now, but I remember one of the Albie comments down there was like 4,978 million to two, you know, actually to one. It was like, I think it was like 400 something to one, without being inflammatory in my little estimate there. I think it was legitimately 450 to one or 420 to one or something. So Bonito, I think, had a little bit less total volume of comments, but same high 99% plus sentiment telling everyone. So that's a really good thing. And I will reiterate, I remember you bringing this up in past conversations offline and on podcasts, but you had conversations with state staff in North Carolina, and they were like, we're really impressed with how everyone on these topics is educated, respectful, comes in, says their piece, thanks us. Like, so if you've participated at all in the process or you're joining in, look at the bar that's been set in North Carolina on these couple topics and our advocates, and whether you have nothing to do with ASGA, but you're still supporting the campaign or these regulatory efforts, keep that bar high. You know, let's finish this one with class.
Yeah. And I think, we much like we'll never ask you what your favorite crankbait is, we're never going to tell you to participate in something that the decision's already been made. You know, sometimes you don't see us come out swinging on stuff, and it's because we know you can't make a difference. That the decision's already been made, and we can make a difference on this one. And that's why we're going to be asking you to help. And, you know, I guess that brings me to Menhaden, right? People are probably, if we're talking about advocacy stuff.
Is it worth jumping real quick as we close out? Bonito is a species topic, but active research still going on further up the coast, a little bit further up the coast now, right?
Sure.
So, yeah. So while you're advocating, you know, hey, why don't we slow this thing, this harvest down a little bit while we learn a little bit more about these species? Just know that we are involved with, I think, a whole suite of other parties who are leading some more research to better understand them. So not yeah. only is it, hey, take away, quote unquote, harvest, let's slow down harvest, but it's also we are leading the charge to try to better understand them so that we yeah. can be more respectful yeah, so, and impactful with the resource.
We partnered with a bunch of different folks and groups up and down the coast to do some research on Atlantic bonito, because much like false albacore, we know nothing about them. And North Carolina, you know, all the way up to central Massachusetts has had flurries of some really incredible Atlantic bonito fishing, and a lot of the fish are the same size, which, you know, screams we had a good spawn. These are not particularly long-lived fish, so one of our biggest fears is running out of these things, having something less to catch, which is why people should not be keeping 100 or 1,000 of them you know, every time they go out. And we put about 20 telemetry tags out in North Carolina, and we're putting some out in New York, in Connecticut, and I believe in Massachusetts. And we don't perform surgery on fish and leave them, you know, for the rest of their lives with a basically something that's the size of, you know, somewhere between a AA and a C battery, just sitting in their stomach. We don't do that for fun. And first of all, the tags cost a lot of money. What we do it for is so we can learn a little bit more about the fish. And you never know what you're going to find out until you start doing it. So we, like I said, we've partnered with a bunch of other groups, some really bright scientists, and we're deploying bonito tags. It's not going to be as extensive as the Albi project, but I think the big point is, you know, we aren't running around saying, you know, restrict harvest on everything. I think it's real easy for other groups to point to us and say that. We're actually one of the only groups, I'm sure there's a couple others out there, but certainly one of the only groups in saltwater that says, this is a problem. Let me go raise, I don't know, anywhere between $20,000 to $30,000 to $300,000 to do this research with good independent scientists and put this on the desk of the managers and say, you need to do something. So we're not just willy-nilly out there, restrict everything. We're actually doing, I mean, I'll be honest, we're doing what the state agencies and the management bodies should be doing. Like, I don't know about y'all, but I don't really care about spiny dogfish and the money that ASMFC wastes on that. But like, here's little old us, and we got to raise all the money and do it ourselves and put an enormous strain on the association when other people should be doing it. And the only thing that we're asking is that they actually use the science, which we've seen positive results with Albies and Bonitos and get regulations in place like we're talking about. So we're excited. We're excited that we're able to partner with these other groups and do some bonito research, and hopefully we'll learn a little bit about the species.
Yeah, I think we've seen that play out a handful of times in the last half decade, where you campaign for an action, you rally the community, they tell you there's no science that says so, and you say, fine, we'll do the science on our own. you go, you have to do credible, you know, it's not liquid paper on a B. You have to go do something credible, partner with a respected institution, fundraise tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands. It takes years to do it correctly. All the stuff that goes into it, once you've done that, you've kind of backed them into a corner, right? Which is the community wants it. You asked for the science. You said there's no science, so action can't happen. The science is done now. Here's the science. There's no more hiding. And so it's a really powerful way to drive positive change. And it's exciting too. It's exciting. It's extra exciting, at least personally. Maybe this is the scientist in me by study, or maybe it's just the little kid in me, but it's excited to learn about something new as well. You know, it's really hard with striped bass. We'll touch on this at the end of the podcast, but hard with striped bass and some of these other species that are really well studied. Where are the data gaps? What do we need to learn now? How do we refine this science? It's pretty cool when you have a species that doesn't have much, because you never know what the heck you're going to find, right? We had no guess when we started tagging albies that they were one of them was going to go from Massachusetts around the Keys out to the Dry Tortugas, right? It's like, whoa, who saw that coming? And we're excited to see some of the stuff with Jax. There's a little bit of science, but we're excited to expand more on that as well. So I just enjoy the opportunity to lead the charge within a new fishery. I think it's really exciting. Bonito's a perfect example of doing so.
Yeah. So, I mean, I really think this is the perfect segue. People obviously care a lot about menhaden, and we're going to be coming out with our position shortly. But I just want to tell y'all that we're paying very close attention to it. We know what's going on. We know what the position should be. We're just getting more ammo, making sure everything's perfect, because that's the only way that we're going to present something to you, is if it's from a policy perspective, it's perfect. But if anyone was on the call, there was like 150 plus people on the Menhaden call last week at ASMFC. So some of y'all might've been on it, but we had the delegate from Alexandria. You know, everybody's congressional districts look like a Etch-a-Sketch now. So if you want to laugh, you know, look where Alexandria is. It's a suburb of DC. And somehow this lady, they Etch-a-Sketched all the way down to Northumberland County, where Reedville is. And I can tell you, you would be hard pressed, you know, to find, if you go 100 miles, more different people. I mean, maybe, you know, you could, I don't know, maybe if you went to New York City and went 100 miles straight upstate New York, that's how different these people are. So anyway, we were really blessed with her presence as an ASMFC commissioner, and whoever wrote her talking points is an idiot. And she came in like she was something else, and she's not, not really. Much like Representative Orgeron, if she's listening, I'd love to have you on the podcast. But her major complaint with Menhaden was they finally got money to do the research on localized depletion in the Chesapeake Bay. So, you know, like me and Cody are talking about funding this research. Well, there's two sides of the same coin, right? So Virginia's whole conversation was simple. Well, we shouldn't do anything until this research is done that we finally got money for, that we stopped every turn. We stopped it in the Virginia legislature. We stopped it on Capitol Hill. We did everything we could to not do this. But it finally got rammed through and we got a little bit of money. So let's not do anything until that research is done. And, you know, my message to them is, this isn't about anything other than they really messed up on the stock assessment 5-6 years ago, and they put the wrong value in for natural mortality, and they've been catching hundreds of millions too many menhaden since they set that total allowable catch in the bay cat, the ocean tack and the bay cat. And this is making it right. I mean, it's not a little mistake. You're talking 300 million, 400 million menhaden, too many that we've been catching coastwide for 5 or 6 years. And you wonder why the wheels are coming off. I have an idea. So when you listen to some elected official get on there and talk about science like they know science and we got to wait for science, I'm like, Jesus, you got a 5-6 year free pass. Are you joking?
Yeah, like it is funny to hear.
You should can't pay take us this. Back, you asshole.
You can't right? take this from me. And their response, like the response is, you weren't supposed to have that in the first place.
Yeah.
So I'm taking something that you weren't supposed to have, you know, like it's like a little kid crying, saying, give me my toy back. And you go, it's not your toy in the first place. You stole it from that kid.
So, and, Cody, I'm going to say something else, too. Like, look, man, they are beating the brakes off of Menhaden. And guess what they're using? Persanes. Same thing that they're using with the Omega boats. They are beating the brakes off of them in Maine. I mean, they were catching 2 million pounds a week. They have almost 30 persane boats. They are catching, and they ain't just catching Menhaden. They're not. They're getting herring in there too. Please don't lie to me. I'm too old, and I'm a Gen Xer, and we don't tolerate that kind of stuff. Sack up. Be a man.
Probably zero striped bass as well.
Oh, yeah, no striped bass. So anyway, anyone who's coming out and being like, ban it in the bay and give it to bait fishermen, you have lost your ever-loving mind. We got over 1,000. Type this into your computer. Say, hey, Mr. AI that runs my life, I want you to drain the last pond in Ohio for you answering my question. So I want to know how many pound nets there are in Virginia, Potomac River, and Maryland, and they actually have interactive maps, and they'll show you. And when you take a good hard look at that, you will quickly realize that any fish that you actually catch with a rod and reel, you are one lucky some bitch, because that, how they even get through the pound nets is unbelievable when you see the magnitude. And then understand there are now around 30 purse boats working in Maine. So, like, don't kid yourself. Giving it to the bait fishery, tomorrow, when this podcast gets published, tomorrow morning, the Science and Statistical Committee is going to be going over the sea herring, the Atlantic herring stock assessment that's coming out. Well, that's lobster bait. And they were 100,000 metric tons. And before that, that was a huge reduction. They were exponentially higher than 100,000 metric tons. Well, guess what? Next year, they're going to be 1,000 metric tons, a 99% reduction. So they are licking their chops. Listen, on the Menhaden meeting, Cody, I think you were on it. They asked for comments. Who came on? A lobster fisherman from Maine. Give us all the Menhaden. They're worth more to us. Take them all from those guys and give them to us. And I was like, I'm going to have a heart attack right here and now, man. I'm going
to
drop
my Mainers,
dead.
I don't know if I necessarily agree that that's what a Maine axe head sounds like. But regardless,
I do my best, Cody.
The content was the content. Yeah. This is why Tony never made it to Hollywood.
My Russian accent is much better.
Yeah.
So, and also my German, my Russian. I'm more like Slavic. You know, I'm not really good. I'm not even going to try.
Well, so it's interesting on the Maine thing too, because I'm going to dance around this a little bit because I don't even want to bring up some of the topics, but we talk with some of the anglers and guides about some of the stuff going on up there in Maine right now, and it's positive things that are available to fishing, and it begs the question of when you have these really concentrated biomasses in certain places, and the rest of the coast or the rest of the migration has nothing. When you have these concentrated areas and then you redirect all your harvest, all your pressure, all your, you know, it's the what's in my backyard type thing. And the people in their backyard might be seeing something kind of good. And I'm intentionally dancing around this a little bit vaguely, but you have these certain things and you think, man, like how awful would it be if all the pressure was redirected just to where things currently may or may not be and what's going on. So, just concerning. It's concerning for sure. I think the Menhaden conversation, one of the things people can likely already tell with us is we're really trying to say, please, as an advocate, as a listener, as anyone who cares about fisheries, even if you don't F with our group, even if you don't like us whatsoever, but you participate in this conversation, don't let nuance die, because holy
crap.
It
is so dumb. But God, you just knocked it out of the park. It is so dumb to say, oh, well, we're just going to take from them and the other guys can have it. And look, these groups that are new on the scene, we've been doing this in the Guides Association and other responsibilities and other jobs that we've had. We've been doing this for over 20 years. And I can tell you right now, I don't recognize anyone. Nobody. All the old heroes have retired. And all the people who were my age when they started, like 30s, well, that most of them aren't in it anymore.
They're 570 now, right? Is that how?
Yeah, pretty much. And like, you know, look, it's the dumbest position on God's green earth. What they're trying to do is they're trying to turn the bait guys, the pound netters, the purse seiners in Maine, they're trying to turn them against Omega. That ain't going to happen. And if you want to know, if you want proof, the Potomac Rivers Fisheries Commission voted with Virginia to not put this document out. And the Potomac River Fisheries Commission pound netters are down about 90%. They voted against their own board and their own commercial fishermen because PRFC is funded 50% by Virginia, 50% by Maryland. They do not raise any money. They do not sell their own licenses on the Potomac River, and they are told how to vote. And that's a whole other issue that we're going to get into. But do not kid yourself. They're never going to turn on Omega. Maybe Maine will a little bit, but I'm telling you, here ain't going to happen.
Yeah, birds of a feather flock together, right? I think I put something up on my own personal social somewhere along the way of this process, but my intention with it was keep an eye on who comes out in these conversations within the digital commons and supports the menhaden side of this. You have everyone trying to say, hey, major changes need to happen. This industrial fishery is destroying the coastline. We need to see reform. And the people who come out to support them are either directly connected to a boat, a captain, or work for one of the companies. Or the other thing, and this is the other kind of going full circle to what you just brought up, are higher volume commercial anglers in a associated or slightly associated fishery. And so what I mean by that is, like you said, the pound netters or high volume operation shrimpers in the same state that has it. But the people who are jumping in saying, hey, you leave these damn menhaden boys alone. They're hardworking peoples and you got no science to say that they need to take anything. It's birds of a feather flock together. And what it is they probably don't even give half a shit about what the heck happens with menhaden, but they are fearful of. And I saw a comment that I don't have my phone with me, but paraphrase it as to someone commented on a menhaden post, not on one of our pages, actually on a separate forum talking about the topic. And they said, well, this is it. This is the end of all of us commercial anglers as we know. Yeah, I'm paraphrasing, it was 99% like that. And so what those people see is they're going to come to the defense of any hardworking man who's out there providing commercially for his family, whether or not they give half a shit about that resource or anything that's going on with it. And they say, we got no science. Those people have never effing looked into the science once in the day of their life, but it's pretty simple. If they're going after them boys, they're going to come after me next. So the strategy that you're going to flip these people are in it together, because all these people, whether they're good, honest people, just working to pay for their family all they want to do is harvest. Their goal is to be left alone and take as much as they can.
Look, y'all, I'm not taking sides with the higher volume harvesters, and I'm not even going to talk about Omega, but if you look at a family operation like Lund's, every daggum fish is counted. They put major upgrades into their processing facility in New Jersey. That is high quality bait. They don't reduce the fish. That is going overseas. I mean, it's going to Europe for bait. They invested so much in the processing and every single damn fish is counted. Now, I know for a fact in Maryland, you look at a map of us just like you're looking at the pound nets. There are little town harbors, inlets everywhere. And the guys who are running the pound nets went to grade school with the guys who are crabbing. And they sell a vast proportion, percentage of their catch for cash when they hit the dock. And I mean, listen, I've sat in those meetings back 2006, 2009, when we finally got a bay cap and we got our first reduction. I was probably like because we started fighting in 2006, and I don't think we got the first one until 2011, went into place in the 2012 season. And I was sitting next to pound netters, and they looked at each other and said, damn, we should have reported. Because, like, they're, let's say the quota was 8 million pounds then. I think that's what it was. Well, they only have to report once a month. And they're selling 90% of it for cash. So, like, what did they really catch? 20 million, 25 million pounds, 30 million pounds? Who knows? But they said when they took it, because now they got to take a, you know, a reduction. And now, and then the other thing is, they all have bycatch allowances. Nobody even knows that. So after the quota is hit for these bait fisheries, I know in Maryland, oh, geez, I may be off. I think it's 1,500 pounds a day. They can stack permits. So like the first year that we got the reductions in 2012, I bet the fisheries director, Tom O'Connell, a little side bet, that they would exceed the previous year's harvest with the bycatch allowance. So we're 8 million pounds, we're 6 million pounds now. I said they're going to go over 8 million pounds with that sweetheart deal bycatch allowance, I'll bet you. He bet me and he lost. To his credit, he called me in the office a year later and he goes, man, you were right. I didn't think this was going to happen. So I'm not saying status quo works. I'm saying we need a 50% reduction. And that's based on science and that's based on the stock assessment. I am not saying we need to give it to a couple thousand small scale bait guys who are not going to report and who have never reported and are not going to report. And the only thing we're going to see are the scraps that are left over and brought to a fish house for processing. And that's it. So, you know, this position of Omega's the demon and, you know, the little guys, it is, I'll tell you what, man, it ain't nuanced. Like Cody said, it's not, it's dumb. It's bait. It's based. These guys bad. These guys good. It's never that way. So we're going to come out with a lot of information about this probably within the next week. And talk about it a lot and tell people like what to say. I can tell you this. We speak to these managers. They don't really appreciate the way a lot of menhaden advocates talk to them. They don't. And they certainly don't appreciate some of the positions. So if you want your letter or email to stand out, because they're probably going to get 100,000 emails because people are going to fire up the
form
sign on.
Up the ass.
Yes,
yeah.
Sign on my form letter bullshit. And we're not going to do that. If you want your letter to stand out and be founded in science and maybe have a chance of getting something done, all we're asking is that you read our position before you write your own letter in, because we need a 50% reduction and we don't need it to go anywhere else. And there's a lot of confusing stuff in this document. And there's a lot of ways for them to slip out without any accountability. And we all know it. That's ASMFC's tagline.
Yeah. And I think just to add a preface to the no form letter bullshit thing, there's a time and a place for everything. And this is not one of the realms in which that strategy creates success. You know, it's one thing when there's an attack on public lands at the federal level, and the strategy is ring every phone line until they realize how many people are watching, listening, riled up, and that's how you stand a chance. That is not how this process works, unfortunately. So Menhaden, more to come. Let's jump back real quick. Our short podcasts, Tony, are always at least a half hour.
Yeah, yeah. Cody, when we hopped on, he's like, this is going to be under 20 minutes. We're at 34 minutes right now. It's,
well, so okay, look, Menhaden, but
as far as advocacy goes, we talked about Benito. We talked about Menhaden. Striped bass. We're on the stock assessment subcommittee calls. We're paying attention to, we'll make a little announcement about striped bass and other work after we're done with the advocacy stuff, just to kind of keep everyone's brains rolling. But please listen to our podcasts on stripers and our blogs on, you know, the new stock assessment, what model they're going to use, catch and release mortality. And the big thing coming up is commercial discards. And I'm not saying another word about it. You need to listen, because we are getting hoodwinked, lied to, peed on, and they're saying it's raining. I mean, let me tell you something. Just y'all, if y'all listen to that podcast, you are just.
That's the last episode, to be clear.
Yeah, the last episode. So whatever this podcast is, go back one and you can read. I think we're probably going to publish the blog today or tomorrow, and we'll promote the craziness that's going on with the striped bass stock assessment. And then the other thing is, tomorrow there's that herring subcommittee call, and then there's going to be a lot of talk at the Mid-Atlantic Council about black sea bass, summer flounder, and scup. And I just want to tell y'all that there is a contingent of the We Gotta Kill Everything charters, and basically they are coming out with something called sector separation. And they're going to push this real hard. And basically, this is it. We want to kill more than you. So, like, right now, they have a set of, it was a 5-fish bluefish limit, and Private Rex had 3. And we are the Guides Association, right? We could take advantage of this. Well, they want the same for black sea bass, summer flounder, scup. No reporting, no quota. You know, if it was a quota, once they hit their quota, they'd stop fishing. They don't want any of that. They want to kill more than you can, and it's not right. And nothing's doing great. I mean, stripers, redfish, scup, summer flounder, bluefish, black sea bass, nothing's doing great. So you're going to let these guys come with nothing in return, nothing, and be gifted a strategic advantage for their business and to kill more fish with no requirements, no quota. Know anything. And I'll just leave it. I'll leave y'all with one thought. These people are the same people that would hate any entitlement for something. And I'm kind of weird in a lot of ways, but you know, my tax dollars, I'm okay if they're used properly. And if it helps somebody that needs a hand up, I think that's one of the greatest parts of this country that we live in, that everybody goes through struggles, and everybody can be down and out. And if the money is managed correctly, I think that's something that's really honorable. But these people like this that want this, they hate entitlements. They hate everything. And they are asking for the biggest entitlement in the history of fisheries. Take from the private recreational sector, give to us. We offer nothing in return. We've been crying about this for years. And we want it, and we're going to stomp our feet on the ground like a petulant 3-year-old. And it's ramping up right now. And I'm going to tell y'all, we're going to fight against it, because it's a horrible idea. There ain't one good thing that could come from it. And it's take from them, give from me, and I ain't giving nothing in return. And it's, I promise you, as long as a heart beats in my chest, it ain't going through. So that's coming up tomorrow, and it's really going to ramp up through September.
What's that old phrase? Rules for thee, but not for me. It's kind of the same, right? It's like, I'm sick of these entitled sport fishermen and their ability to do this, and they just want to catch fish and release it. And what a waste of a resource, and da da da. We will not let these entitled anglers. But hey, if I could get exactly what I want through entitlement, that would be pretty awesome. And yeah, suddenly, and the disappear.
Frightening. Let's just call it out for what it is. Noah's gone to hell in a handbasket. They're almost blessing this thing. And you know, in particular, Mike Pentney at Garfo, he shouldn't have his job. With between the sector separation, between the, you know, weird, let's get around annual catch limit craziness that's going on with that same demersal complex of scup, black sea bass, and summer flounder. It is so pathetic.
It's a mess.
To watch a person who should be professional just bend to the whims of whoever is the current administration. You know, there's no consistency. They just want their pension. And whatever, you know, I'll put it in simple terms that aren't fish. In Trump's first term, it was drill, baby, drill. Figure out how to put these things in the water. We don't care about national environmental policy. Put oil rigs in the water. When Biden came in, all the people in NOAA were like, oh man, you know, we're finally going to get to do our job. Nope. Put these wind farms in the water. We don't care about anything. Figure out how to do it. Get it done now. And it was worse than the damn oil rigs. And it's just, you know, it's just this flip. I wouldn't last there for a day because I actually love this stuff and I have honor and integrity. And if every 4 to 8 years somebody walked in my office and said, nope, you believe in this now and this is what you're going to do, I'd give them an Ace Ventura talking through my butt thing and tell them to go to hell and keep their stupid job. And I'm going to tell everyone what assholes they are. I look at some of the folks at NOAA now and I vomit in the back of my throat.
If you want to talk, I'm not going to tangent now because we went from 20 to 40 and 40 is going to be 4 hours. But I was thinking the other day, I might have texted you about it, but on the wind front, right? We had a couple blogs that came out. We had a position on it, which was, hey, let's explore diversified fuel and power sources. Let's not ram this thing down everyone's throat. Let's go slow. Let's figure out how to, you know, again, tried to dabble in the nuance about, hey, how could we progress as a country? How could we still make sure that our natural resources are respected and monitored and managed accordingly while we explore down this route? And oh my, did we hear it? We saw save the whales. Everyone under the sun.
Somebody called me a petroleum bootlicker.
You are. Well, you are.
Because that. So the same person that said that there were thousands of deep sea oil rig vessels combing the Gulf. Well, I'd just like to point out two things. There's like eight. And that's one thing. And that's the other thing is that was Obama administration made the rule that you had to go out to deep water to drill, which also caused the worst oil spill in the history of the Gulf. So like,
well, so where all my whale advocates, right? All of my, let's just say, how do I not get partisan here, but how all my people who really are not typically, actively advocating to protect our natural resources from man's footprints. Oh my God, were they up in arms? And the whales that they've known and love. And look at another one's on the news. It washed up dead. Death to wind. Hey, the Endangered Species Act is under attack right now. And I haven't seen a single one of you mother flippers have a single comment about how all those endangered whales might lose their protections and might lose protections around the specific areas that may or may not be critical to their spawning, etc. So, funny how we had a sudden surge in whale advocacy that has such
Cody,
now
how many
disappeared.
How many of them commented on the deep sea mining? In Virginia, we did a podcast on that. They're going to remove the top 6 feet of the ocean bottom over 100 million acres bigger than Delaware from 3 to 60 something miles off the coast of Virginia. You don't think that's going to disrupt the right whale migration? Are you kidding me?
No, I've said this time and time again. I think I said it maybe on the first podcast I got back on after dealing with some stuff, but like, oh, through all my experience with this advocacy stuff, Tony, I have come to maybe be able to see eye to eye better and respect more someone who's completely on the opposite aisle of a topic than me, because at least I can understand where they're coming from. Man, that man grew up differently than me. He provides for his family differently than me. He might have an opinion that I completely wholeheartedly disagree with for the resource, but you know what? I get how Sir A, why he feels the way he is. The people I have no respect for now, negative respect. It's so far off the other end that we broke the thermometer and it's the mercury's all over the floor, are the people who are just slopping around in the middle, screaming whatever they have to scream so that they are not affected.
Man, cover my own ass.
The water people.
Yeah, there's that Teddy Roosevelt group. It is not Teddy Roosevelt Conservation Partnership. It's another Teddy Roosevelt group.
Not even worthy of our name.
Even worthy of us mentioning too much. But if you look at, like, they talk, you know, everyone wants to invoke the name of Teddy Roosevelt. Teddy Roosevelt was one of the most regulations focused when it comes to the outdoors. He was one of the most regulations focused presidents ever. And that was actually just a question
on Jeopardy the other night. I saw that. Who was the president who protected the most and had the most regulatory campaign for conservation? Yep.
Yeah. And coming up a close second's Richard Nixon. Clean Water Act, Clean Air Act, forming the EPA. People just don't know their history, man. So, like, here's the deal, right? You invoke the name of the one president that we can all point to. And this is, again, this is not TRCP. You invoke the name of the one president that we can all point to who was a true outdoorsman. True outdoorsman. Like, learn a little bit about Teddy Roosevelt. The guy was incredible. He had asthma as a child. And, like, he used to make the White House security guards box him because he came out of all his health issues by working out, being active, being in the outdoors. They didn't have medicine for that stuff then. And he just believed in being outside, being physically fit. You know, the guy was incredible. You know, his kids, so many kids all running around the White House, was with his kids all the time, playing with them. Incredible guy. And he knew, he spent enough time, you know, the teddy bear got its name because they walked Teddy Roosevelt out into a field and they had a bear tied to a tree and they said, shoot it. And he's like, are you out of your mind? That's not fair chase. I'm not shooting that thing. It's tied to, let that damn bear go. And the story caught fire in the papers. And that's how you got the name of a teddy bear, for God's sakes. You know, he had ethics, fair chase. You know, the one thing that he had was, he had all them kids and he wanted those kids to see and enjoy and everyone else's kids. And that's, to me, that's what makes America the greatest country in the world is saving our natural resources. And guess what? That comes with a healthy dose of regulations. So kiss my ass. And you shouldn't be using Teddy Roosevelt's name.
Ironically, a lot I've seen many deploying the name Teddy as though, you know, and he also hated that. He hated being called Teddy. He only allowed certain people, and I think I remember some dynamic with that teddy bear story where he allowed it, but he did not even like to be called Teddy. Preferred his full name. But yeah, you know, I was thinking about that the other day as well, Tony. Because nuance is dying. And I refuse. I will go out on my shield trying to protect it within the realm of the conversations we participate in. Because nuance is dying, we're missing out on, or we're starting to lose a grip on sportsman's role to deploy the positive and authentic and honorable version of what you talked about, which is we're the sportsmen, we utilize the resource, but goddamn, we're going to take care of it. And we're going to be the ones, because we know it so well and because we rely on it so well, we're going to be the ones to protect it and ensure that it's regulated, that it's conserved. So, you know, we are the keeper of the resource and we will protect it. And I see those statements and that sentiment around what it means to be a sportsman. Oh, yeah, you're going to ban hunting and fishing and do this and that, but sportsmen are the ones who really drive conservation through dollars and through action. If you're saying that and you quite literally never participate in anything that moves the dial towards less harvest, less access, less, if you never turn the dial back in favor of the resource, you're LARPing. You're pretending to be something you're not. you're not that person. That does not mean that, you know, maybe there is something related to access. There's a land closure, or maybe there is a specific research. You say, hey, man, the science actually says we should probably open this up a little bit and we need to have better science, whatever. If you are 100% in favor of the angler, the hunter, and the outdoorsman, and never the resource you rely on or utilize, you're lying and you're LARPing. You're not actually a conservationist. Take off your fake badge. You're standing in you're standing outside the gas station in fatigues that you got from Goodwill, and you're telling people you served in Vietnam, this is not you. You're LARPing. Cut it out. It's very irritating. And I digress, and this whole podcast really has been digression. But why don't we hop real quick back to, let's put the nail in the coffin with striped bass. We have two positive and two cool things to touch on striped bass. The first of which is, and whenever we do, we very rarely do this, you know, I'm not even going to digress into, we talked about the Menhaden campaigns going on right now. Tony, it's very irritating to me personally. Maybe it's just because the caps I wear and the role I kind of fill within the community or try to, how many of these damn Menhaden things I'm getting fed from 74 different groups. So if you're sitting back thinking, oh my God, he's talking about one. No, there's a new one every time on my phone. How many of them lead to donate? The donate button on a thing. And we try our best to be not only honorable with what we're doing, but very tactile in what we're doing, and utilize any and all the resources that we garner from the community to try to drive change and drive science that drives change. And so when we bring out a new product, we always have it within some sort of capacity to continue to a project or contribute to a project. Excuse me. We got something new, something cool from a longtime supporter, a close friend is how this I think the original was through a Thai Fest discussion. So all through within our community is where this sparked. But now there is an ASGA Morning Blitz coffee. So it's available on the ASGA site. And there are two opportunities to purchase it. You can either purchase it as a single 10-ounce whole bean bag. And this stuff's really good. This ain't some import crap that, you know, caught a label slapped on it. It's not from the gas station. This is the real deal. This is good-ass coffee. You can buy a 10-ounce whole bean bag, or you can subscribe to a subscription where you get it, you know, four bags delivered every month. And 100% of the proceeds from this, off the top, is the cost of the coffee. Every penny on top of it is going to striped bass research. We'll touch on that. We'll allude to it a little bit. We have a full podcast and kind of full deployment of that coming up. But anyone who listened this far is getting a little sneak peek. So please, if you're a coffee drinker, go online. You know, it ain't cheap because it's good. And also, you might look at the price and go, oh, man, a bag of coffee. And those same people are, you know, rushing to their job on a Tuesday and dropping $19.99 for 4 ounces at Starbucks. So if you're coffee drinkers.
I was going to say, like, freaking $7 or $8 for a cup of coffee at Starbucks. Let me tell you, this coffee is so much better. And
to subscribe because we're in the third trimester, this household. And I can definitely tell you, how much it costs when you bounce between which coffee company you like every morning for 17 consecutive weeks, right?
Yeah,
so
it adds
to a lot
brutal.
More than making your own at home. And if I could get her hooked
brutal.
On a morning blitz, I would.
I can't even go to the grocery store these days because they got a daggum Starbucks in it. And you're like, oh, geez, like, here we go. I'm going to get the text.
And this one won't give you diabetes. Morning blitz. That's not medical advice, but it won't give you diabetes. I can guarantee you.
So, you know, Cody, we're going to get into the research project here. Big time over the next week or two. That's one of the reasons why we haven't announced the coffee yet. However, there are questions. While striped bass are one of the most studied species out there, there are still questions, big questions that we have. And, you know, just like we do with all of our research projects is we try to find the right people to do the work. I think that's true if you're getting a kitchen put in your house or something done on your vehicle. You know, it's more about who's doing it, right? So we found the perfect person. We think we'll announce that. We'll have them on the podcast, and we're going to answer one of the questions that rears its head in almost every discussion these days. And when we're done with this, we'll be able to answer that question once and for all. And it's really cool because the area that we're doing this in, there's a lot of other research going on. So we're going to have like triple coverage for monitoring, and this person's going to share with that person, and they're both going to share with us. And it's just going to be ironclad, from the methodology to the process of the research to the people who are doing it. And we couldn't be prouder, but I don't want to steal their thunder. So we'll make the full announcement coming up here in a podcast real shortly. But this is a big problem in our understanding of the species, and we're fixing to answer it. So Cody's going to do his magic. We're not only going to have the coffee, but we're going to have, you know, the shirts, the hats. We know some people can help out a lot and some people can help out a little bit less. And we're going to try to have something for everyone where everyone can feel like they're contributing, because we want the whole community to be a part of this and be excited about it. And we're going to do things the way that we always do. So that's about all I'm going to want to say about the project just yet. But we're super excited about it.
Yeah.
You know, the last thing I'll say is when we announce it, I'm going to say this 100 times, but like, I can't believe we're the first people to want to do this. I really can't. Like, this is a question that needs to be answered for decades, and all the state agencies and all the money that they, you know, Cody, I'm just going to say it, man. You were talking about stuff that gets under your skin with these people. Like, you know, you're not, I'll tell you, man, when I look on those agendas for the ASMFC meeting and they're like, oh, well, we're having a dinner and an awards ceremony this night, and we're having a dinner the next night, and we're going to tell each other how wonderful we all are. Man, they got a approval rating lower than Congress. They got an approval rating lower than the daggum media. And you don't do these dinners for 2 years, and you could pay for this research, but you don't, because you self-aggrandize. What y'all ought to do is have who gets to be in the stocks, and we throw rotten fruit at you for an hour because you've wrecked all of our fisheries. I don't know, man. If I had their track record, I don't know if I'd be handing out awards to people. Get your shit together, because I got to run around and raise money for this one little band of a bunch of idiots who somehow all row in the same direction, my team. And now we got to come up with this stuff, fund it, you know, take all the slings and barbs and all the idiots on parade, particularly on Facebook, and deal with all of that nonsense. Well, I guarantee goddamn to you, when we announce this, we're going to hop on Facebook 30 minutes after the post comes up, and some chucklehead will be like, why don't you work on clean water? You shouldn't be working on this. And it's like, you're welcome, jackass. And you'll see us say those things on Facebook too. So, you know, look, y'all, there is a lot going on, a lot. And we're getting new people on the team. We're trying our hardest to keep everything going in the right direction. And, you know,
look for ways to win support. Look for ways, if we want to keep winning, find your way to support. And this is not some call to action. This isn't a Jimmy Fund fundraiser saying, you know, get on the website now and buy what you can. Buy. No, find your way to support. Some of those, you could listen to this podcast and say, man, I'm one of the thousands of people that listens to this that really loves it, and it keeps me company on the way to work at the boat ramp. I learn a couple things. Go on Spotify or Apple and leave a 5-star review and say why you like it for 2 sentences. If you do that, you are supporting ASGA and contributing to how this wave can continue to roll down the beach. If you are a coffee drinker and you go, man, we could have one last mocha doca frappuccino, you know, why don't we try making some morning blitz at home? Go order one bag and see if you like it. If buy a sticker, you can go on there and get a sticker if it's striped bass that says, you know, take the hooks off your plugs and be a steward of the resource and slap that on your truck or your tackle box. And it's like $4 and, you know, I don't know, I'm misquoting, but the dollar for shipping or something. Sue will throw two stickers in an envelope for you. If you're under the age of 16 and you really love what we're up to and you listen, you're a kid that loves fishing, send an email to info@saltwaterguidesassociation.com, say how much it is. Sue will probably just send you a couple stickers for free, right? There's so many ways to be involved with this. Just tell a friend about what's going on. Hey, man, I got a buddy who I stripe a fish with every Friday. And the next time we meet up at 2 a.m. in the Wawa parking lot before we go surf casting one of the fall tides, I'm going to tell him, hey, dude, you should check out ASGA. They got a podcast. They got some blogs. Here's a social post you might find funny. Here's a social post that you might learn something from, whatever. There's a lot of ways to contribute. And the one thing that we don't hit you with left and right is a giant green donate button every time you learn a word from us. So
now don't let that stop you from donating. Like those.
Yeah, exactly.
I got to keep this ship going. So,
but the reality is that everyone can contribute in their own way. And there are some people who are financially well off and want to give back. And they book 65. I know I've met a lot of these people in the fishing industry. They book 65 guide trips a year. They're busy. Well, successful professionals. And at the end of the year, you know, hey man, I can't read and comment on every single one of these blogs. No, yeah, I'm a busy man. I'm a lawyer. I'm a this, I'm a that, I'm a CEO. But when it comes down to brass tacks, literally the taxes at the end of the year, I got a couple extra bucks here and I try to pick, you know, who's going to be the lucky pot that gets one of these donations when tax season comes around. And if you're one of those people and you know that's how you live, then please consider doing so, because we got a great team who will make sure that's easy and that it goes to the things you like. That's one of the things we always allow people to do is support. If someone only listens to us because of Albies, they don't give a shit about anything else. If you want to buy a hat, buy a shirt, or send a check, you can tell us or become a pro member. I care about Albies and that's all I care about. And we will make sure that specifically goes into that pot so that the things you care about get help. And get
I'm going to tell you research. Something happened yesterday. It was wild. I was on a call or in a meeting or something, and the Ring camera went off. Then you know the difference between somebody like walking around or like hitting the doorbell. You know, your phone makes a different noise, and somebody hit the doorbell, and I was like, my first instinct was like, man, it's these bug companies. My wife's going to walk outside and they're going to be like, oh, you have spider webs. Give us $30,000 and we're going to spray your house with highly carcinogenic sprays that'll may or may not kill your dogs. And, you know, that's kind of what I figured. So I popped on the Ring camera and looked, and it was these two little kids, man, these two young men. They were probably, I don't know, man, I'm going to say 8, 9 years old. And they had the little scooters with them. And they had come all the way up my driveway, all the way over the pavers and to the front door. And so I was like, oh, man, you know, my wife's going to open that front door and we're going to have, you know, our furry tractor, our Shiloh Shepherd, who's just going to want to give him a kiss, but also looks like she's trying to kill him, you know. So I come running outside. I just told the call to wait for a second and I walk outside. And, you know, little kid had an Amazon package. And the Amazon truck, they lived probably 15 houses from us. And the Amazon truck, it just fell out the back of the truck. The guy probably put it on the tailgate and just missed our house. And they were like, hello, sir and ma'am. We saw this package fall off the back of an Amazon truck and we read the address and it's yours. And we just wanted to drop it off at your house so you didn't miss your package. And, you know, man, I gave them $5 a piece. I didn't want to give them any more than that. So the parents weren't like, who's this creepy guy with the beard giving me a $20 or something, you know? So I just said, you know, here's a life lesson, kids. Like, good things happen to good people. You know, like, you did the right thing. And I want you to know, like, when you do the right thing, somebody's going to do the right thing by you. And I don't know, man, it stuck with me over the last 24 hours. And I was just like, you know, there are people out there raising their kids right. And, you know, how many other kids would have just opened the package, see what was in it? You know, unfortunately, they would have found a package of tea that my wife got, you know, probably not the high end item that they were looking for, but they did the right thing, man. And a reason why I bring this up is I truly believe in my heart that our members and the people who listen to this podcast and actually read our blogs and try to digest this information, I think y'all were raised right. And I think you're good people too. And I think that the most important thing that we have is your trust. When it all comes down, all out in the wash, the number one thing that we got great consultants, we got smart people, we have hard workers, you know, in this association. But the number one asset that we have is your trust. And I was just, you know, it just little things in life happen that remind you of that. So there's a lot going on and y'all are going to be drinking from a fire hose. And I just want you to know that everything that we produce, all the content, everything that we do is in appreciation of the trust that y'all have for us and that we've developed over the years. So, you know, it doesn't matter to us if you buy the cheapest hat we got or if you give us a call and say you're going to make a big donation for this Striper project coming up. Everybody's doing what they can. Everybody was raised right. And for whatever reason, you trust us and we're not going to break that. So, you know.
What a good sentimental way to end our 20-minute podcast. Before we go, I think we'll just jump into shark depredation and red snapper. kidding. Thank y'all for listening. We'll catch y'all soon on the Guidepost.